This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we talk with a Port Townsend woman whose own personal tragedy may turn out to be a lifesaver for many others. And now, we go inside the Compass. Teenage years are never easy, but in recent years, an increasing number of troubled teens consider suicide as an option. Port Townsend has not escaped this. 4 years ago, 15-year-old Benji Kenworthy took his own life, which first shattered this community, but then led to an option that could help save teenagers' lives. The Benji Project provides teenagers with stress management and emotional resilience skills to keep them from a drastic action that would affect everyone around them. KPTZ's Charlie Bermant talks with Benji's mother, Cynthia Osterman, who has built the project into a valuable local resource.
Yes, this is Charlie Bermant here on KPTZ. Thank you for joining me today. Cynthia Osterman is here. Say hello.
Hi there.
Could you move it a little closer? There. Okay, perfect. Okay, so there's no easy way to tell this story, which was told in the beginning of this broadcast, but we're going to move onward here. Cynthia, it's always been rough for teenagers. Why is it rougher today?
I think there's several factors, and certainly some of the things that teenagers face today have always been around. In our community, we have a lot of families under stress because of jobs and finances. Our county has lower than state average income and higher than state average unemployment, so that causes a lot of families to struggle. But I think the things that really stand out for me that are different today is technology and social media. I think it makes kids feel like they're constantly scrutinized and they always have to live up to an image that's probably not very realistic, but they may not have the perspective to know that of, you know, everybody on social media is having a great time and their life is going swimmingly and everything from the outside seems so much better than it feels to me on the inside. Generally speaking, our world is just hyper competitive these days. We've got a very winner take all society. And so I think it feels very intense. Kids feel that, it's always a question of success or failure in terms of, you know, getting a job or getting into college. Just the stakes feel really pressured.
And there's social media is happy and look at how cool I am and so on, but it's also the arena for tremendous bullying.
Yeah, and I think it's also just, there's so much self-judgment that goes on and social media is essentially forces you constantly to be comparing yourself to others. And if everyone, you see images of everyone with their perfect relationships and their great vacations and whatever it might be, even though that is probably not their reality either, it's a moment, a fragment that they're sharing with you, you may feel inadequate or less because of your life isn't like that. So there's that, and then there's just, the incredible dynamics of friending and unfriending and how many likes did you get on this picture. It's, I don't pretend to understand all the nuances of it because I didn't come of age in the social media generation, but, you know, in talking to kids, I realize that there is a lot on their backs and, you know, needing to respond to messages or react to posts within a certain time frame, and how many posts, how many likes did you get on an Instagram, and things like that. I'm sure I'm messing up the vocabulary. They're all going to laugh at me, but
sure. But there's got to be a connection between noticing that I have 100 likes when you have 10,000, and wanting to harm myself. I mean, there has to be other factors.
Yeah, you know, I don't pretend to be an expert in this area. One thing I did learn after Benji's death was that something like more than 60% of people who die by suicide suffer from depression. So that was probably a factor for him that we didn't recognize at the time. You know, there's a really high incidence among youth of anxiety, depression, anxiety, lots of stress-related well-being challenges. I think it's a combination of circumstances. I don't know if there's one answer in terms of the cause for suicide. Certainly, another really big factor for adolescents is just what their brain is doing. You know, during the teenage years, the parts of the brain that are very impulsive predominate, and the parts of the brain that control executive function and judgment don't mature until the mid-20s. And I certainly feel like that was a factor for Benji, that there, you know, he made a decision on a moment in an impulse, and a different day or an hour later, it could have had a different outcome.
And you didn't see it coming?
No. I, of course, have tremendous regret.
Well, you look back and you see the signs looking back, but at the time.
Right. No. Yeah. He was a complicated kid, so, you know, maybe it was harder to tease those things out. I certainly have lots of regret and self-judgment about not anticipating it, but no, I didn't see it coming.
Well, I met Benji, I believe, once. If I recall, he was in sixth grade at Swan, and his class was going to D.C. for something. Is that?
Yeah, they did a class trip, to see all the monuments.
Yeah, and I went in there, and he just struck me as, I mean, he was really mouthy and funny and just, just a kick.
Yeah, he was super bright and super creative, and, I think as I spent, obviously, many months, years, I think about this daily, you know, trying to unravel what was going on for him. I think that he was a really sensitive soul, and he had his way of coping in the world was to kind of put up a front that, you know, conveyed that he was doing great. He wanted the world outside to see him as a really, you know, functioning, successful person. I think on the inside, though, he obviously didn't feel that way. And that's what led me to mindful self-compassion, which is the focus of the Benji Project. It's really about becoming more at peace and accepting the reality of how things really are, which is that sometimes life is challenging and there are struggles. Sometimes it's great, but it's so much better if you can put down that mask and accept yourself for who you are, and also feel okay in showing that to other people too.
Okay, this is Charlie Burmant, KPTZ Compass, a special live edition. I'm here with Cynthia Osterman. We're discussing the Benji Project, and certainly Benji projected this well-adjusted image, which everybody bought. But there's also I remember teenagers are generally like that. And I know that teenagers generally don't share with their parents so much. So that puts you in this really no-win situation almost. So what about some of the programs? You have programs that build self-confidence for kids. How do they work?
So our programs are based on a curriculum of two elements. One is mindfulness, which is essentially practicing paying attention to the present moment without judgment, so just acknowledging the reality of what's going on in any given moment. And self-compassion, which is treating yourself like you would treat a good friend, which on its face sounds so easy, but I think part of what we were talking about, that comparison, it leads you know, when you compare yourself to other people, it very quickly leads into a lot of negative self-talk, like, you know, everybody else has this figured out, I don't, I'm always going to be a failure, or I'm never going to be popular, or look at this, I screwed it up again. I certainly experienced a lot of that after Benji's death, you know, feeling like a terrible mom. And so the idea of turning to ourselves with kindness and acknowledging that, you know, we're doing the best we can, this is a really hard experience, whether that's, you know, you're in school taking a test, or, you know, it's your, whatever, you lost your job, you know, all those experiences are an opportunity to practice kindness to yourself. So we use a curriculum that is evidence-based. It's adapted from an adult curriculum specifically for adolescents. It's the core program is an 8-week workshop that runs for about 2 hours a week. We also offer it as a camp. Last week we had a camp for ages 11 to 14. The curriculum is designed for ages 11 to 19. We generally find it works better to break that down into smaller groups, kind of middle school focused and then high school focused. We're also looking at offering this at Port Townsend High School, and hoping that will come together for this fall.
And how do you get kids into the program? Are they somehow flagged as being troubled, or is there a way you could give it to everybody? Because, you know, basically everybody has these.
Yeah, everybody needs it. I think at Port Townsend High School, we'll be offering it to all kids in certain grades. In our regular classes that we hold in the community, a lot of times it's parents who want the kids to come. Often we hear kids the first time say, you know, they're not there because they chose it. Somebody coaxed them to come. At the end, we get overwhelmingly positive feedback. We do follow-up surveys, you know, or we do surveys at the beginning and the end, and something like 95% of kids say they're glad they took it, that they came away with something valuable that they can use in their daily life. It's a combination of ways that kids come to the program. Some kids sign themselves up. Some kids are signed up by their parents. We work closely with a lot of agencies and therapists, and we sometimes get referrals from those sources.
So, you know, being a nosy news guy, I have to ask, about how you keep this program going. How is it financed? You know, how it works, basically, on a financial level.
Yeah, so this is my first foray into the nonprofit world, and I'm coming to realize that it's a process of constant fundraising. All of our programs operate at significant loss. We just had a camp, and I think we had 16 kids in it, and I think only two kids paid the standard registration, which covered about a third of the actual costs. Most kids pay just a nominal fee, and, you know, we are glad for that. We're glad that we can offer scholarships, but it needs a lot of fundraising. And thankfully, we have had a lot of support from the community. We were the fund-a-cause recipient from the Rotary Gala this spring, which brought in a significant source of revenue. We've been supported by Kiwanis and other groups, but it's a wheel that has to constantly keep turning. We're going to need to fundraise again. And I hope that the community will see the value in these programs and understand that cost shouldn't stand in the way of kids getting access to this. You know, we are happy that when we have scholarship dollars available, that we can admit any kid without concern for financial need. Our first classes were funded by the Fund for Women and Girls, and those classes were entirely free thanks to their generosity. And we've since then are now trying to find a sponsor to do the equivalent for a boys' class. So if there's any men's groups out there that want to support that, we'd love to speak to them.
So you segregate the classes by sex, then?
Not always. We did with the initial class because the Fund for Women and Girls designated that their money be spent on behalf of girls. We have done mixed high school classes. Our camp last week, which was for early teens, the feedback we had from parents was that they thought having boys and girls separate would be more successful, and the camp went really well. We had separate session for boys and girls. We're experimenting with what works best in our community and what works best with the kids. It definitely seems like separating older teens and younger teens, the age separation is important since they're experiencing such different things. In terms of boys and girls, it seems like mixed gender works well in the high school years. Younger kids feel maybe more self-conscious or awkward when they're around the other gender. So far we've been doing separate classes, but we could certainly look at doing a mixed class.
Okay, this is KPTZ Special Compass. I'm Charlie Berman here with Cynthia Osterman of the Benji Project. So where does substance abuse fit into this whole picture?
Well, I think there are, a whole range of unhelpful behaviors that result when kids are suffering and they don't have the tools to cope with what they're experiencing. And, there's self-harm. We have, it's really common these days for, especially among adolescent girls, there's cutting behavior and other self-harm, drugs and alcohol, early sex. There's just a whole range of things that tend to be symptoms of distress. And sometimes it reflects lack of support at home, or kids who come from families with substance abuse or domestic violence or homelessness. All of these things predispose kids to behaviors like substance abuse, early drug and alcohol experimentation. There's been a lot of research done on what they call adverse childhood events, which are they abbreviate as ACEs, which is sort of a measure of trauma. And they look at different events like, a parent being incarcerated or homelessness, or, and the number of traumatic events that a child experiences, the higher that number is, the higher of number of ACEs that they have experienced, the higher the likelihood, the more at risk they are.
Wow, it sounds like an impossible task, really, because everybody's different. Everybody's coming in with their own problems, and there are all kinds of warning signs. excuse me. So, I'm watching you talk about this, and I'm wondering how this whole thing affects you, where you're, it's been 4 years, and after 4 years, although the hurt would never go away, there, you would think there'd be some healing. But the fact that you have to talk about this all the time, how does that do for your own state of mind?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I do find sometimes that it's, it's reliving a very difficult experience in my life. But I feel also an incredible sense of purpose, and I feel that it's very important that something positive and beneficial come out of this really terrible tragedy. And for me, this work, I feel a great sense of purpose about it. I feel it's a way for me to continue loving and honoring Benji, and staying present with the reality of what's going on in our community. I feel that as adults, we have a job to do to support our teens. And, it's just unfortunate that I wasn't able to prevent Benji's death. But I certainly hope that some of the work we do might make life a little easier for other kids.
Tell me about the people who you're working with, your team.
Yeah, so we've got a really fantastic team. We have an excellent board that includes people with background in healthcare, mental health care, and juvenile justice. Among our board members is Susan O'Brien. She's the manager of the clinic at the Port Townsend High School. We've got Daryl Tidwell. He's a mental health administrator and and counselor who moved here a few years ago from the LA area. We have Kelly Parcher, who is an international anti-bullying trainer and involved with Proctor House here locally. I'm really excited about our scholarship winners. One of the barriers we faced to expanding our programs is that we didn't have any local people certified to teach this curriculum. So 2 years ago, we awarded two scholarships, one to Teresa Shirashi, who's a counselor and advocate at Dove House, and one to Heather McRae Wolf, who's an educator and yoga teacher in town. And they did a year-long course of study to become able to teach this program, and they finished that in July and will begin teaching this fall. And this past spring, we awarded two more scholarships, so in another year, we'll have four local teachers.
Well, so I remember the when Benji died, and there was this phenomenal outpouring. You had this memorial service at the Maritime Center, and the whole community just stopped. What I felt at the time really was, God, if he could have seen this, he wouldn't have killed himself.
Yeah, I honestly think it was, you know, a moment, you know, maybe a bad day, but that a different day he would have had a different decision. But you know, we can't look.
I guess I didn't mean to make it so personal, but just to say that any one of us. I mean, Benji was a performer, and he was very popular and well known. Any one of us would draw a memorial of some kind, and you know, you just what I thought that whole memorial would be a lesson to other kids, saying, "Wow, you know, if I did this, I would get this memorial, and so maybe I should just stay where I am and not take action." I know it's. I was moved by the whole thing. I know that.
Yeah, it was. I got. It was tremendously meaningful to me too. I so appreciated the support from our community. I've always loved Port Townsend, but that made me really so grateful for the way the community came together. I think, you know, I'm not sure if it was what you were driving at. You know, there is a phenomenon where. You know, one teen suicide will prompt others. There'll be a cluster. I'm so happy that wasn't a factor here. It's, you know, we do have a very high rate on our healthy youth survey. I'm not sure if there are newer statistics, but in the 2016 edition of that, 23% of the 10th graders in our county reported that they had attempted or considered or attempted suicide. So it's not as uncommon as I would have thought. I was very shocked by that figure.
Well, you know, there's a gap between considering and attempting. And then there's a gap between attempting and succeeding. So I guess it's probably best to start at the bottom, but to prevent any consideration. But so we're working on kids who are considering or attempting and trying to build up their self-esteem. What about working on some of the kids who are causing the problem? I mean, I guess teaching anti-bullying is part of it.
Well, I think, you know, defining the problem is the problem. because, you know, for all of us, we all have our own experience. And certainly, you know, bullying is a factor in, you know, kids struggling, but we also have kids who struggle because they are really under a lot of self-imposed pressure to achieve, you know, like academic stress. There's a lot of different kinds of stress that kids face, and I think it's impossible to create, you know, sort of external solutions for all of them, which is why I find mindful self-compassion so powerful, because what it really addresses is each individual's ability to cope and thrive with whatever they're facing in their life. So, you know, whatever we come to this world, whether we're, you know, people who are bound for high achievement or we're just, you know, sort of bumbling along, we all struggle, we all have ups and downs, and being able to cope with those and bounce back from hard times is paramount.
Okay, this is KPDZ Compass. I'm Charlie Berman here with Cynthia Osterman, the Benji Project. We don't have very much time left, so maybe in what we have left, could you tell us where you think the Benji Project's going to be in a few years? Do you have a long-term goal, or do you have expectations?
Yeah, well, we certainly want to touch every teenager in our county. I think the best way to do that is try to get them pretty young, you know, middle school, early high school, and at least give them some exposure to these concepts through school or in, you know, some broad scale kind of way. And there's no limit to the need for this kind of a program. Certainly if we succeed in reaching our whole county, we would look to expand beyond that.
Okay, well, this is KPTZ Compass. I'm Charlie Bermant. This is one of those educational shows. It's not going to be really easy for a lot of you to listen to this, but, you know, it's a good thing that you did, because we can learn these lessons, and certainly whatever lessons you teach these kids will follow them throughout life.
Yes, for sure. I think, you know, that's the goal, is to give people tools, give kids tools so that they don't get to a crisis point. Certainly we can use the help of our whole community, you know, both, you know, with our project, either by volunteering or donating, which can happen through our website, www.thebenjiproject.org, or just, you know, thinking about the kids in our community and being there for them, standing up for them, and supporting them.
Okay, well, thank you, Cynthia, and thank you, listeners.
The Compass airs Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. with a repeat Saturday at noon, exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.